Understanding Populations. Section 2. How Species Interact with Each Other. What's the difference between lions in a zoo and lions in the wild? In the wild, lions are part of a community and a food web. In the African savanna, lions hunt zebras, fight with hyenas, and are fed upon by fleas and ticks. Interactions like these were part of the evolution of the lions that you see in zoos. Any species is best understood by looking at all of the relationships the species has within its native communities. An organism's niche. The unique role of a species within an ecosystem is its niche. A niche includes the species' physical home, the environmental factors necessary for the species' survival, and all of the species' interactions with other organisms. A niche is different from a habitat. An organism's habitat is a location. However, a niche is an organism's pattern of use of its habitat. A niche can also be thought of as the functional role or job of a particular species in an ecosystem. For example, American bison occupied the niche of large grazing herbivores on American grasslands. Kangaroos occupy a similar niche on Australian grasslands. Herbivores often interact with carnivores, such as lions, if they both exist in the same habitat. Some parts of a lion's niche are shown in Figure 9. Ways in which species interact. The five major types of species interactions, summarized in Figure 10, are competition, predation, parasitism, mutualism, and commensalism. These categories are based on whether each species causes benefit or harm to the other species in a given relationship. Keep in mind that the benefit or harm is in terms of total effects over time. Also note that other types of interaction are possible. Many interactions between species are indirect, and some interactions do not fit a category clearly. Competition. For most organisms, competition is part of daily life. Seed-eating birds compete with each other for seed at a bird feeder, and weeds compete for space in a sidewalk crack. Competition is a relationship in which different individuals or populations attempt to use the same limited resource. Each individual has less access to the resource and so is harmed by the competition. Competition can occur both within and between species. We have learned that members of the same species must compete with each other because they require the same resources. They occupy the same niche. When members of different species compete, we say that their niches overlap, which means that both species use some of the same resources in a habitat. Indirect competition. Species can compete even if they never come into direct contact with each other. Suppose that one insect species feeds on a certain plant during the day and that another species feeds on the same plant during the night. Because they use the same food source, the two species are indirect competitors. Similarly, two plant species that flower at the same time may compete for the same pollinators, even if the plants do not compete in any other way. Humans rarely interact with the insects that eat our food crops, but those insects are still competing with us for food. Adaptations to competition. When two species with similar niches are placed together in the same ecosystem, we might expect one species to be more successful than the other species. The better adapted species would be able to use more of the resources. But in the course of evolution, adaptations that decrease competition will also be advantageous for species whose niches overlap. One way competition can be reduced between species is by dividing up the niche in time or space. Niche restriction occurs when each species uses less of the niche than it is capable of using. Niche restriction is observed in closely related species that use the same limited resources within a habitat. For example, two similar barnacle species compete for space in the intertidal zone of rocky shorelines. One of the species, Familis stellatus, is found only in the upper level of the zone when the other species is present. But when the other species is removed from the area, C. stellatus is found at deeper levels, as shown in Figure 11. In the presence of competition, the actual niche used by a species may be smaller than the potential niche. Ecologists have observed various other ways of dividing up a niche among groups of similar species. Predation. An organism that feeds on another organism is called a predator, and the organism that is fed upon is the prey. This kind of interaction is called predation. Examples of predation include snakes eating mice, bats eating insects, or whales consuming krill. Figure 12 shows a predatory bird with its captured prey. Predation is not as simple to understand as it seems. We may think of predators as meat-eating animals, but there can be less obvious kinds of predators. In complex food webs, a predator may also be the prey of another species. Most organisms have evolved some mechanisms to avoid or defend against predators. Some predators eat only specific types of prey. For example, the Canadian lynx feeds mostly on snowshoe hares during the winter. In this kind of close relationship, the sizes of each population tend to increase and decrease in linked patterns, as shown in Figure 13. However, many predators will feed on whichever type of prey is easiest to capture. Parasitism. An organism that lives in or on another organism and feeds on it is a parasite. The organism the parasite takes its nourishment from is known as the host. The relationship between the parasite and its host is called parasitism. Examples of parasites are ticks, fleas, tapeworms, blood-sucking leeches, and mistletoe. The photos of parasites in Figure 14 may make you feel uneasy because parasites are somewhat like predators. Unlike predators, though, parasites usually do not kill their hosts. In fact, a parasite has an evolutionary advantage if it allows its host to live for a long time. However, the host is often weakened or exposed to disease by the parasite. Mutualism. Many species depend on another species for survival. In some cases, neither organism can survive alone. A close relationship between two species in which each species provides a benefit to the other is called mutualism. Certain species of bacteria in your intestines form a mutualistic relationship with you. These bacteria help break down food that you could not otherwise digest or produce vitamins that your body cannot make. In return, you give the bacteria a warm, food-rich habitat. Another case of mutualism happens in the ant acacia trees of Central America, shown in Figure 15. Most acacia trees have spines that protect them against plant-eating animals. But the ant acacias have an additional protection, an ant species that lives only on these trees. The trees provide these ants shelter within hollow thorns, as well as sugary nectar glands and nutrient-rich leaf tips. In turn, the ants defend the tree against herbivores. Commensalism. A relationship in which one species benefits and the other species is neither harmed nor helped is called commensalism. An example is the relationship between certain orchids and trees, shown in Figure 16. The orchid grows around the tree's branches without harming the tree. The height exposes the orchid to rain and sunlight. Another example of commensalism is when birds nest in trees, but only if the birds do not harm the tree. Even a seemingly harmless activity might affect another species. Symbiosis and coevolution. A relationship in which two species live in close association is called symbiosis. Many types of species interactions are considered symbiotic in some cases. Symbiosis is most often used to describe a relationship in which at least one species benefits. Over time, species in close relationships may co-evolve. These species may evolve adaptations that reduce the harm or improve the benefit of the relationship. Recall that harm and benefit are measured in total effects over time. For example, coevolution can be seen in the relationships of flowering plants and their pollinators. Many types of flowers seem to match the feeding habits of certain species of insects or other animals that spread pollen. You've reached the end of this chapter. Before moving on, review the main points of the section by reading the summary. Then, take some time to demonstrate what you've learned by answering the review questions. Your teacher may want you to apply your knowledge by completing the lab exercise on the following pages. The chapter review and standardized test preparation will give you additional practice using what you've learned.